Welcome to the Relationship and Wellness Podcast with Nicola Beer. Nicola runs transformational breakthrough programs for individuals and couples and has several award-winning audio programs. For details, visit www.nicolabeer.com today. Please note, places are limited and are available on first-come, first-served basis.
Hi and welcome. I'm so happy you're here. I'm going to be talking today about low self-esteem and where does it come from. It's really important for healing low self-esteem, for healing trauma, to make sure that you understand where it's coming from. Because often people act out in their relationships, not because of how their partner is treating them or reacting to them, but because they are triggered by events that have happened in the past. That could be events that have happened in childhood, events that have happened a bit later on in childhood, in the teens, in early relationship, 20s, 30s, and they can be carrying all of that baggage with them, and it's affecting their relationship. They maybe are very anxious, they're very avoidant, they shut down, they can't express their emotions. They find themselves in cycles of behaviors like cheating, porn addiction, other addictions. And they just wonder, like, how can I stop this? I don't know why I'm doing it. And that's often because unconscious reasons from earlier on. Now, this might be a triggering episode for some people, as I'm going to briefly mention abuse. I'm going to briefly talk about childhood and things like that. So I really recommend that if you are in a vulnerable place right now, not to listen to this episode, because, you know, it may trigger some things. And if you feel like you're okay and you're not in a vulnerable place right now and you do want to listen to it, if you do feel uncomfortable, if it does bring things up for you, then please, you know, call a helpline, discuss your feelings with somebody or go and seek some therapy. Or I'm going to put along with this podcast episode a 15-minute call link with me, and at the very least, of course, you're welcome to talk to me. Unfortunately, I can only give 15 minutes because I am very busy and I practice what I preach. I do actually look after myself and make sure that I have time to relax, time to exercise, time to be with friends, time to be with family. So I will do the best as I can. And also, for those in my paid programs, I do offer unlimited email support and a set number of sessions. So that's why my time is limited. However, if you need a call because it's triggered something in you, please do take advantage and we can have a call. So in order to heal trauma, in order to heal low self-esteem, we need to understand where it's coming from. And if you can't identify with that, but if you feel like, you know what, I really don't know why I'm acting like this in this relationship. I wasn't acting like this before. In other relationships, what's going on? This episode will help, hopefully really help you to know where to look, because so many people come to me and they want to get to the root of why they've cheated. They want to get to the root of why they panic when their partner goes away for a few days. And if you identify the root and know where it's coming from, it's going to save you so much time in your healing journey. If you seek therapy, you're going to know where to start, and it's going to save you energy, money, and time. And if you don't have that resource available to you, it's going to really help you on your own self-development path. Many people don't realize that the way they behave in their relationships are because of the past, as it's so unconscious why we do what we do. Every behavior, however, normally there is a reason behind it that's very unconscious to us as we're doing it. For example, I've worked with couples where a man didn't want sex and his wife blamed him for being asexual. His wife blamed him for being asexual, when in reality, he was traumatized by earlier sexual abuse, and sperm, the sight of sperm, made him feel really uncomfortable, disgusted even. So he was avoiding sex because that was a real trigger for him. So together, we worked together to release that trauma from his body so that he could then enjoy sex. Other males that have done my breakthrough program have found that they cheat in relationships or get addicted to masturbation or porn because in their childhood they felt not good enough, or they were bullied, or they were rejected by girls when they were younger, or they felt empty, they felt lonely, they felt unhappy. And it could be for any reason. And then, of course, they try masturbation, they get a huge chemical change in the body, a huge stress release, the happy hormones pump through the body, that rush, that good feeling escapes them from the norm, and it feels great. And so they then learn to do it again and again and again, and it becomes addictive. I had one man that whenever he felt anxious, he would masturbate. And so he was masturbating like 4, 5, 6, 7 times a day. And we needed to teach him how to deal with anxiety without this, because his wife was getting very disappointed because he was not interested in her. So there's many different reasons why we do things. And for him, it was not being very popular at school, having lots of acne, braces, girls wouldn't look at him, and it was a cause of stress. So it's important to understand and really have empathy for why we do what we do. It's important not to shame young boys, teens, adults, young girls, but have compassion for them, that they found a strategy to deal with life and it felt good, so it became an addiction. I've shared before in other podcasts that I suffered with bulimia. For many years, I always wondered why I did it, because sometimes I was already too thin. I didn't want to lose any weight. So I was like, why am I being sick of the food I want? I want to eat that food. I want that food to be in my body. My body needs it. But yet I was being sick and I didn't really get it. And so one day, Googling in a desperate need for a reason why I made myself sick, because some days it could be 3 times, that was a good day. And sometimes it could be up to like 20, even 30 times. And it's exhausting because you just feel dehydrated. You've got the acid in your stomach all being everywhere. I felt like an absolute loser. I felt like a failure. My face was puffy. My throat hurt. I felt dehydrated. And yet I'd get up and do the same thing the next day. So I had to know, why am I doing this to myself? Well, one, of course, I don't like myself, because if you really loved yourself, you wouldn't be doing that to yourself. But it's a lot deeper than that. And I found that vomiting causes the body to release endorphins, the natural chemicals that make you feel good. So when I realized that actually this is my way of giving myself a good feeling, this is my way of coping because I don't feel good enough. And where did this come from? Well, it comes way back for me, which I may go on to a bit later. And then it was compounded when my father left when I was 13, because he was my rock. He was my world. He was the only happiness and joy in my life in my early childhood. And then he went and vanished for like 3 months. And then I saw him every 4 or 5 weeks with all my brothers and sisters for a few hours. So it was completely different to obviously living with your parent and seeing them every week. And I was just left with my mum, who I always made unhappy. That's how I blame myself. She was always angry and I felt like she hates me. And so I had the disease of bulimia for a very long time. And it was only when I was compassionate with myself, it was only when I realized, okay, you don't love yourself and you don't think that you're lovable. Because high self-esteem is about really believing that you are worthy of loving. You being you. Yes, I had confidence in work. Yes, I had confidence in meeting people one-on-one or in small groups. However, inside, I really felt I'm not good enough and interesting enough and special enough to have a man love me the way I want to be loved. I saw myself so poorly. And so many people book my breakthrough because They want to uncover what is behind their angry outbursts, behind people-pleasing, behind cheating, behind addictive behaviours, behind sexting, behind all these different things. Social media addiction is another one that is taking the world by storm. So many people are addicted to the likes, to sharing semi-naked pictures of themselves, and they get addicted to that. They get addicted to that attention. And knowing why can really help a couple resolve issues that they need to address and look at the underlying beliefs and feelings that are causing conflict. Because the truth is, and I'm sure you don't really need me to say this, but I will anyway because it's so important. The truth is that nothing outside of us, nothing outside of you can give you lasting happiness and self-esteem. Feeling good in yourself and thinking highly about yourself is so important. Often people think more money is the answer. A better car, a bigger house, early retirement, a promotion, designer clothes, more lavish holidays, fame, and it's not. Some people believe that their self-esteem will come from fixing themselves. So they have surgery, dental surgery, all these different things to try and change the way that they look, and they look for happiness in that. And some people blame their partner for not having self-esteem. They say, you don't love me enough, you don't compliment me enough, you don't go out of your way to make me happy, you don't whatever it is. And this doesn't work either. Self-esteem is feeling great in yourself. It's feeling good in yourself. And that's what I really love about Deepak Chopra when he says that people often confuse self-esteem with self-image. And they focus on their self-image, they focus and they care what other people think of them, they focus on having and holding this big self-image, and then they realize that it just causes more anxiety, more stress, and more pain, and doesn't give real feelings of that love and warmth and just contentment. Whereas when you have self-esteem, things around you, they kind of bounce off you. They don't stick because you feel like, yes, I'm good. I had a person that I worked with yesterday, and he said that he was triggered because his dad said to him, you don't know what you want. You don't know what you're looking for in a relationship. You're lost. And he was so angry and hurt by this. And it bugged him for days and days and days and days. And he said, Nicola, I need to have a session with you. I said, sure. And the reason that it was hurting him so much was because he believed it. So we need to look at what we believe, and are those beliefs helping us or not helping us? Because this is what happens in life, right? We have triggers from negative experiences, and we react to that experience. Like, he could have gone crazy at his dad, but there may have been so many other times where he doubted himself, where he didn't trust himself, where he didn't believe in himself, that when his dad said that, it just triggered him. I always believed that I was unlovable, that no one wanted me. Even up to the age of 29, I felt the urge to avoid being a burden to people. I had an identity belief. I am a pain. No one wants me. And this came from my mum telling me that I drove her crazy and just to get out of her way, not to be seen or heard. And then when my dad left, my mum would tell me, see, your dad doesn't want you. He's not giving us any money. See, your dad doesn't want you. He's not around the corner. He's a few hours away. And I began to believe it. No one wants me. And then in my relationship life, I wouldn't ask people to do things with me. Even on my birthday, I wouldn't ask people to celebrate my birthday because I thought, well, what if they don't want to? I don't want to be not wanted. I'll do anything to avoid not being wanted. So therefore, I won't have any needs. And the breakthrough process that I now do for other people changed my life because I was able to see for the first time that I'd been stuffing down so many deep emotions. The night before I had the breakthrough booked, I woke up at 3 a.m. full of rage, anger, hurt. I was pacing around my room with all of this emotion bubbling. I don't know if you've ever had that before, but where you feel like you're going to burst like a pressure cooker, and like the emotions were just like so overwhelming. And I was like, what is going on? I was shaking, I was crying, but I was angry. And I was so angry at my mum. And I was so stunned by my anger, because all up until that age of 29, I was the closest to my mum. If my mum needed anything, I would run and do it. Anything she wanted, I was the closest person to her out of my other four siblings. And I was like, well, I'm not allowed to be angry at my mum. She's my mum. And I would say, yes, my mum was stressed in our childhood, but now it's okay. Now she's different, and we get along now that I don't live at home. And so I was not ever processing the emotions that really needed to be processed. I downplayed everything. And these feelings, holding on to this anger, holding on to this worthlessness, not liking myself, was turned inwards towards me. So that anger I was carrying was then, Nicola, you are bad. Don't eat this. Don't drink this. Don't say this. This person thinks this of you. This person thinks that of you. It was a nightmare in my head, and I didn't even know, because I would just criticize myself all the time. It was so habitual. Just waking up and thinking, oh, you look awful today. Oh, don't wear that. And it was just that negative voice. And because I'd internalized that anger, I was punishing myself through food. I would starve myself. I would exercise myself into the ground. Then sometimes I would overeat. Then I would be sick. You know, it was just this cycle, because I hadn't felt the feelings and I denied my childhood. I denied what was really there. Now, a lot of people may think, well, yes, Nicola, but the past is in the past. I can't change what happened to me in my childhood, so therefore I'm just going to leave it there and carry on with life. Well, that's excellent. If you're a person that doesn't need to release anything, and that you're really happy with the way that you're living your life now, you've got no addictions, you're a peaceful person, you're a calm person, you're feeling fulfilled, you're feeling content, you love yourself, you like yourself, you've got strong relationships with friends, family, and romantically, fantastic. Very few people can get to that point unless they deal with what happened. And this isn't to blame parents. This isn't to ever say and get on an angry trip with them that lasts. This is just to acknowledge, actually, this is what happened to me. This is what happened to me. I was bullied. It doesn't even have to be from your parents. I was bullied. Or my parents loved me so much, but they were so busy that I didn't see them. Or my parents loved me so much and they wanted the best for my education, so they sent me away to school. It could be anything. But denying what happened to you or what feelings were there, it makes it very difficult to understand yourself. It makes it very difficult to be able to change. A lot of people struggle to break free because they might change from one addiction to another addiction to something else to something else, because they're just looking for excitement. They're looking for things to distract them from the way that they're feeling. And I know in my heart, and I have an amazing relationship with both my mum and dad now. I speak to them very regularly, and I feel great about that, because I know that they were doing the best they could. They did their best. And how can I or anybody else expect their parents to do any better or know and act any differently if they don't know that? And it didn't take years to get there. It took me the breakthrough process and probably about another 2 to 3 months integrating all of the healing for the me then to be able to form a really strong relationship with again. So I did for about 2 to 3 months just have a pause, and I really forgave them, I really forgave myself, and I got to that point of peace. So If you feel that you are triggered in your relationship and it doesn't make sense to you or it doesn't make sense to your partner, it could be worth looking for those deeper reasons. Because in order to free yourself from the feelings, you need to feel them, learn from them, move on. And you also must have compassion towards yourself. Because sometimes people try to make right behaviors that they've done wrong by punishing themselves, belittling themselves, shaming themselves, and this doesn't help them. It doesn't help their family or their romantic partner, because if they've gone into a depression and they hate themselves and they feel like they're a loser, they're a failure, they're this, they're that, they're going to stay in that stuck down place, and that also needs to be changed. And like I mentioned, in the breakthrough process, it happens very fast. Some people do prefer a slower approach, and that's absolutely fine. It really depends on you. If you have addictions, habits, behavior that bring you down, if you're bogged down by thoughts, if you judge yourself, you criticize yourself, if you don't understand why you do things in relationship with others, why you overreact, why you can't take personal criticism, why you've always got to look for excitement, why you can't sit still, then it could be that there is conflict within you, unresolved emotions, uncleared wounds inside you that need to be aligned. So now I'm going to go on to identifying the root causes of low self-esteem and where it got reinforced after. And I hope as you're listening to this, you're having compassion for yourself. You may recognize this in other people. Always remember this. It really helps me. Hurt people hurt. My mum physically hurt me. She was hurting. I knew as a child she was hurting. She lost her mum when she was 16. She watched her mum die of breast cancer from 12 to 16 years old. Then she took on the mother role in the house and worked. She didn't have that loving mother figure in her life from 12 to 16, maybe even younger. So how could she give that to me? She'd never had that. Hurt people hurt. And that also needs to apply to you. Self-forgiveness is very important. So let's just ask you a general question. Do you know where you started to feel less than others around you? Do you know when you first thought, I'm not good enough? Were you shy as a child? Understanding where it comes from is important because you can then know what kind of therapy to do, which I'll explain. As I discussed in my previous podcast, the first low self-esteem one, that it's often closely tied up with childhood. And a child prays for being self-sufficient, mature, caring for their siblings, doing house chores, taking themselves to school, being self-sufficient. Children that are praised for getting top grades, they learn, I'm only worthy of love if I'm doing good for others. Or those in, you know, families of high achievers, I'm loved if I achieve academically or in sports, for example. And sometimes, and this is not to blame anybody, but sometimes these children suffer because they believe they are not worthy of love and attention. They have to earn it. And the truth is, you should never need to earn someone's love. We don't need to earn love. We are lovable as we are. Other children may experience emotional abandonment, where the parent is so busy with work, another sibling, their own troubles or addictions, they are not really there for the child. These children tend to blame themselves for lacking somehow. The unconscious feeling for a child is the notion that, and of course these are all unconscious, but just imagine a child being around a mother that's constantly anxious or stressed, never happy. The child will absorb that because we all take things personally. The unconscious mind takes everything personally, and especially children take everything personally. And they would believe, if I was a better child, my mother or father would give me more attention. If I was a better child, they would be happy. I'm making them unhappy. You wouldn't believe the amount of families I've helped through divorce where the children believe, and they'll share with me, oh, if I kept my room tidier, maybe mum and dad would still be together. Or if I did my homework by myself, because mum and dad argue over my homework, then if I wasn't here, then they would be together still. It's my fault. Dr. Gabor Maté's research on addiction and trauma showed that children of depressed and highly anxious mothers developed addiction problems in adulthood. So the mum is depressed, and then the children go on to develop an addiction. There's that correlation, because we absorb energy. The energy that you transmit into the room, into the house, is there. And this is passed on to the children, and the children sense that something's not right. Why is my mother so unhappy around me? Why is my mother so anxious or stressed? Must be something wrong with me. Another study that Dr. Gabor Maté talks about in his research and in his presentations, got some great videos on YouTube, highly recommend you check them out, found that with asthma, a child having asthma, they looked at what is the correlation, what is the pattern, why are different children all around, I think it was in the UK, getting asthma. And they couldn't find a social economic reason, couldn't find that money wasn't a difference. It wasn't the area in terms of being in a city that was heavily polluted. The only significant pattern that they found was when they asked the mothers, are you stressed? On a scale, rate how stressed you are. And the mothers that said they're very extremely stressed, these were the children that had the worst cases of asthma. Now, of course, that research probably needs to be studied again. And this, of course, is not to blame any mothers at all. Being a mother is naturally stressful. And there will be times that you'll be anxious because you are so focused on making sure that your baby is healthy, alive and well. It's just interesting that working on ourselves, making sure that we are happy, looking after our own inner energy is so important. Another example of low self-esteem in childhood is where children hide their feelings and be whatever the person wants to be. You've heard me talk in the podcast about being a chameleon. Some people are a chameleon in relationships, like they adapt to whatever who is around them. They become who the person wants them to be. They may become people pleasers. They may lie, compulsive liars. All of the compulsive liars that I've worked with actually are such lovely, kind-hearted people. When they've done the breakthrough to get to the root of their lying, it comes out that they weren't accepted and they were scared and they adapted to the family dysfunction. Our biggest fear in life is to not belong. So as children, if we grow up in a dysfunctional household, we will adapt to it. We will do whatever we can to fit into that family system. So the children become what the parents tell them that they are. If a parent tells you you're bad, you become the bad child. If a parent tells you you're mature, you're mature. If a parent tells you you need to be like this and say this and do this, you will do it. But in doing so, you ignore who you really are and you lose sight of yourself. And you learn subconsciously, of course, that being me isn't what people like. Being someone else is what people like. And this is where insecurities manifest and get bigger and bigger and bigger. And later on in adulthood, it might come out as depression. It might come out as lying, might come out as cheating, hiding secrets, workaholism, looking outside of us all the time to be happy. And even children with the happiest childhoods can still experience low self-esteem by well-meaning parents that want their children to do well. Parents that want their children to have experience and do more than they did can end up pushing their children to perform in a whole host of things that they don't want to. In doing these activities, the children lose touch with what they really want to do, their authentic self. And they learn to get love and praise through results, performances, learn skills. For example, playing sports, learning how to play a musical instrument, being a dancer, being a singer, an actor. Sometimes these children don't even like these things, and yet they're pushed into it by very loving parents. So there's many different reasons that a child may decide or may lose touch with themselves and believe that who they are needs to be hidden. Who they are is not good enough. Who they are needs to be fixed, changed, and that's when a child can get low self-esteem. And sometimes children born into one-child households can suffer because the parents are like, right, we don't want to spoil you because you're the only child, so therefore we're going to go out of our way to not spoil you. And that can mean withholding praise or withholding love, withholding time and attention. So the child can feel, what am I doing wrong? For children who grow up and there's lots of siblings, sometimes they're in competition with one another. They compare themselves to one another, or their parents compare them, or to compare to their cousins or their other friends' children. And that can often lead to a child feeling inadequate. And then there's bullying, whether inside the family or outside the family, can create a huge blow to a person's sense of self. I remember being bullied for having flamingo legs. That's what I was told by this guy at school when I was probably 13, 14, because my legs were really thin. And my best friend, bless her, she was called Ghost because she was white and she had like really white, like light blonde hair. Now, children can be so cruel as well, and that can have a real impact on a person. And I've had many people pleasers that I've worked with where they've had a horrendous time at school being bullied. And they've just tried to buy friendships, win friendships, and they just try and please everybody because they're so scared of not being liked. Changing schools can also be traumatic for children, can really cause a lot of low self-esteem where people feel they need to buy friendships, win friendships, be someone they're not to get people to like them. And our childhood bonds are so important in forming the trajectory of our self-worth. It's like, this is where it starts. If your neural pathways are not positive, if you don't feel good in yourself, then when anything happens to you after that point, it's used as a tool to reinforce, see, I'm not good enough. See, I can't do this. I'm sure we can all remember a time in our childhood where we really struggled with our homework and we kicked and we screamed and we said, I can't do this. And it just got so frustrating. And that's what it can feel like for so many people with all these childhood things, but then they just bottle that in. They keep that in. They keep that frustration in. And it then carries on to looking for ways to escape in adult life. So if you can recognize childhood, and this is the point of what I've shared so far, then start with some inner child work. Inner child work is where you connect to your younger self, sometimes giving that younger self a voice to speak their truth and share what needs to be said. Having compassion for that younger you. The more compassion you have for why you do what you do, the quicker the healing journey. The more you stay in beating yourself up, the more difficult it becomes. When I do the inner child work for people, I have that little child in whatever scene it is or memory it is, speak, tell people what they need to tell, get it all off their chest, all out of their cells of their body. It's extremely powerful and freeing process. It has the power to release tension in the body, to change memories, so that a person can no longer access that pain. When you release the memories, when you release the tension, it's like a weight has been lifted from the shoulders. And then in their relationship, they don't react. They act with a conscious choice. And then I get people to take it a step further with the inner child work and help them to become their own loving parent, where they treat themselves in a loving, kind, compassionate way. Often we can treat ourselves the way our parents treated us. We can criticize ourselves. We can judge ourselves. We can push ourselves to work harder. We can never be happy with the things that we're doing, never see that they're good enough. The amount of people, and I must say that I was like this as well, will do anything because they just want to hear their parents say, "I'm really proud of you. I'm so proud of you." And so they do everything to get that praise. And unfortunately, some parents won't actually ever give that because that's not what they're comfortable doing and expressing. So becoming your own loving parent is about motivating yourself with positive self-talk. Like, you've done so well, you can do this. When you're having a bad day, just say, "It's all right. Like, let's just have an early night. Let's just relax. We'll wake up tomorrow. Everything will be better." You know, just soothing yourself. I was very lucky that in my childhood, I had my nan look after me sometimes. And my nan would give me, whoever she was looking after, her full attention. She would hold me in her arms the whole time. And she would sing to me rhymes and nursery rhymes and lullabies. So I really felt love. And I'm so grateful to her for loving me for me. And so when I imagine being my own loving parent, I imagine myself being like my nan, giving myself attention, giving myself love, giving myself compassion. Like I mentioned to you, I managed to finally heal the bulimia, which I feel is actually one of my biggest achievements in my life, if not the biggest achievement in my life. I was able to heal that by saying and having compassion to myself, with myself. And when I messed up after, you know, let's say I did 3 days good and then I messed up again, rather than beating myself up like I used to, I just say, "It's okay, Nicola. You're going to change this. Let's look at why you did it. What were you feeling? Where do those feelings come from?" Then I would get and speak to a specialist if I needed to, talk through the feelings, get some compassion from them, and I worked through it. And it was easier than I ever imagined, because when I was trying it myself, when I didn't look at my past, when I denied what was happening to me or what happened to me, I was just stuck in a cycle, swapping one addiction for another addiction for another addiction. Now, I've done a lot of inner child work to heal my own past, and I left each session feeling so much lighter and at peace. And this is how I love to support people. And it's really hard to explain in words in this podcast to you what that vibration of love feels like. But it's when you connect to that peace, that consciousness, that like bliss, where you just feel like, "I'm good. Life is good. I don't need anything. I don't want anything. I'm just happy." And that's the point you can get to. And the same reason so many people struggle is because they are in the past or they're in the present. They're thinking about the past or they're thinking about the present. They're worrying about the future. Anxiety, what's going to happen in my relationship? Do they really love me? Do I love them? Shall I stay with them? Are they going to do this? Are they going to cheat? They're just so in their own anxious thoughts. And some people are so in the past, like, "Why did I do that? I can't believe I did that. I feel guilt. I feel regret. I shouldn't have done that financial investment. I shouldn't have married that person. I shouldn't have said that to my child. I shouldn't have done this. I shouldn't have done that." And you cannot be happy unless you are in the present. Have your goals. I love setting goals with my clients. And set your goals and then enjoy every day to get there. I've struggled in the past where I have been so fixated on, right, let me achieve this, then I'm going to be happy. Right, that's going to happen in 1 year or 2 years or 3 years or 6 months, then I'm going to be really happy. And in all that time until I get there, And sometimes I never even get there, but in all that time, I'm miserable because I'm just focusing on that. I'm not even enjoying the life in me to have a great day. Every day is an opportunity to have a wonderful day. Every day we wake up, we can have a beautiful day. Every day you wake up, you can have a beautiful day with your partner. Holding that love, being loving, taking loving actions feels great. So what can you do today to bring yourself more into the present? How can you live your life more into the present? It's so important to look at, as I mentioned in the other podcast, how you talk to yourself, what you think about yourself, how you treat yourself and your body. Now, many people I work with, they say, I can't recollect any low self-esteem or any trauma in my childhood. I had a great childhood. Yet they can remember being a teen and having difficulty studying, not being popular at school, not having nice clothes compared to the other children, feeling rejected, being humiliated by the opposite sex, no one wanting to date them, dealing with slow or fast body changes through puberty, having spots, greasy hair, things like that, being overweight or underweight. Some people I've worked with, they struggled in their late teens and early 20s because they were a virgin and they felt something's wrong with me, I'm inferior. All these things that I just mentioned can lead someone to feel that they're inferior and then they get their low self-esteem from that. And in adulthood, there are so many reasons why people may develop low self-esteem. Because whenever anything poses a threat to a person's sense of self, it can create a feeling of not being worthy. It can create a feeling of losing something, not being good enough. And losses such as losing yourself to an addiction, losing your temper in an alarming way, losing a job, business failure, threat of a breakup, an actual breakup, being cheated on, big financial losses. All these kind of losses create trauma. Coming up soon, I'm also going to explain what trauma is and the four things needed for your body to encode an event is traumatic and generate a traumatic response. Like a lot of people, I didn't believe that I'd had any traumatic experiences. But when you actually learn what trauma is and how easy it is for your body to encode something as traumatic, unless you release that, unless you do some work to release that, it can cause PTSD. So let me just give you an example to make it make more sense. Let's say you're in a relationship, you're dating someone, it's fairly new, you really like them, they really like you, you've had a few dates, you've shared a few, quite a lot of messages between you, and then all of a sudden, they block you. They ghost you, basically. They just disappear. And you can then be shocked. And you can start to panic, and you can feel, what did I do wrong? What did I say wrong? How have I done this? You know, I'm giving that energy of like, ugh, anxiety. I hope you can sense that, you know, when someone's like, what's happened? What did I say? What did I do? They overplay everything in their mind. And they're just in that like anxious state, you know, your body's shaking kind of thing. And you're just like, what? And then you call up a friend and you share with a friend and they're like, calm down. It's okay. You know, they're trying to help you. Or they might not. They might get into the drama as well because the same things happen to them. So they might feed your anxiety and go, yeah, that's terrible. What did you do? And what happened? And he must be like this or she must be like that. And so you feel all that stress in your body and that energy needs to go somewhere. But because you think, oh, it's such something small, the next day you're like, oh, wow, I'll just get over it. And it probably takes you a few weeks. And then you're like, okay, he obviously wasn't right for me or she obviously wasn't right for me. But then you might feel like, I don't want to date anyone for a while, and you feel disappointed, and you feel like, oh, dating's a waste of time, and, you know, feel in that kind of low mood. And then, however long it takes you, you go back to it, and you think, right, now I am going to put myself out there, and I'm going to go dating again. And then your new boyfriend or girlfriend doesn't respond to you for a day. And then you go into a panic. And that might have happened years ago. Let's say you're married. You have children with your partner. And they're very busy at work and they don't reply to you. Or they come home and they don't want to speak to you that night. But then you're in this same state of trauma because you haven't actually calmed that. So it's post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, being triggered, and this affects your current relationship. This is why sometimes people get so anxious when their partner goes out. They get so angry and throw things when small events happen. Because even if we consciously think, I'm over it, it's no big deal, our body can still hold on to it and still reignite that same fear. And then when you feel that same fear in the body, the words follow, the behavior follows, because everything's interlinked. Our emotions, our feelings, our emotions, our thoughts, and then our behavior. It's all in a triangle. They all impact each other. This is where people say, I don't know why I acted like that. I don't know why I said that. Because you could have been triggered from something a long time ago. This is another area where I think, why aren't we taught this at school? Why aren't we taught about trauma? How it's so easy for the body to go into a traumatic state and how to heal it and how to calm it. Why aren't we taught about relationships? Anyway, I could go on for ages about that. So there are likely to be many incidents in your life where you've just brushed it off, carried on telling yourself and everyone you're fine, moved on, but your body may not have moved on. That is the point I want to make. And now that's leading you to struggle in your relationships. Because our amygdala, this is the part of the brain that is responsible for our fight, flight, freeze, and displace rage response. There's four responses. When something happens, there's four responses. Fight, fairly self-explanatory, you fight. Flight, you run away. Freeze, this is the most common. I've frozen most traumatic events in my life. I just stay there like that and don't say anything, don't do anything. And then rage. Displaced rage, where you just get really angry and it comes out of nowhere. And it can be at something completely different to the event. And it explains why some people in romantic arguments have rage that seemingly comes from nowhere. And why some people freeze and they don't say anything and they just look at their partner blankly. The partner says, right, that's it. I don't want to be with you anymore. I'm going to get divorced or I'm going to whatever. And the partner goes silent. Just looks at them and doesn't know what to say or what to do because they've frozen. They just stare blankly. They don't even say, I'm sorry, or I don't want this. They just look emotionless. And it's also why some people just run away and then they avoid you because they think, this is what I do, I just flight. And some people will fight. And this is called complex PTSD. When something in the present triggers a person and they have that same similar sense of loss, of fear, of rejection, of hurt. And the person goes back to their old pattern. They go back to what they learned as a child. They may freeze, they may run away, they may fight, they may have rage. I use two different processes to heal from past traumatic events, which I combine together at the same time for maximum results. And for this, I also do it as a standalone sessions, so people can book by the hour. I realise that not everybody is able to do the breakthrough program, not everybody is able to do my marriage program, although compared to the cost of divorce, the emotional pain and stress, it's nothing. And compared to having a happy life and the amount of money that people spend on all these other things that are definitely not going to bring happiness for a lot of people, especially if you have low self-esteem, especially if you aren't really good at loving yourself, find it hard to invest in themselves. They find it hard to say, well, actually, I'm going to use some of my savings or I'm going to put this money aside so that I can do the inner work. Often people still look for those outside things to feel good inside, or look to their partner to fix the relationship and fix their feelings. So the point I really wanted to make with all of this is understanding, where does your pain come from? If you're reacting in a relationship with anger or with anxiety, where is it coming from? Have compassion for yourself and then make a plan to heal it. There are so many anger management courses out there. I can't say which ones are good. I always combine mine with hypnotherapy to make sure it really lasts, and I do the breakthrough with people because you have to get to the root of what's made them angry, what is the root of all the anger they're carrying. So that's how I do it. However, you might be able to find a course, a book. It's important to say, right, I don't want to be like this anymore, if you're acting in ways you don't want to act in your relationship. And then you take some action. Or if you know, actually, I am reacting in my current relationship because of things that have happened to me in my past, be it a past relationship or earlier on, you say, right, I'm going to fix this. I don't want to feel like this anymore. And having compassion for your partner is also important. It's not to enable them or to say, okay, I'm going to accept this behavior. It's to say, okay, if I see you getting help, if I see you making an effort towards changing this permanently, not just pretending it didn't happen and saying it won't happen again. If I see you doing some work on this, then okay, I will support you and I will open my heart and open my, feel positive, but I will give you this chance. It's also understanding that people will make mistakes as well. And it's important to apologize and to really have a plan. That's the point. Just like if you feel depressed, you need to have a plan to get out of it. You can't heal depression unless you have some kind of way to get out of it. Now, that way might be to really go on a journey of building your self-esteem. It might be working through the childhood stuff. It might be changing your life circumstances. Becoming free from addiction, things like that. It's a plan. And the same with any unwanted behaviors. What's your plan? What are you going to do differently? Because doing the same, carrying on the same path and saying I'm going to change it isn't often enough. My earliest memory that came up for me when I was doing my inner child work in a therapy session was when I was 4 years old. In the scene, my mother was saying, I could kill you, you little brat. And she was shaking me. And then she stopped and went on to say to herself that she wishes she was dead. And then say, I hate you, Janet, which is her name. And then she would say, no, I can't hate you, because if I hate you, that means I hate my children. It was very confusing as a child. What does she mean? She hates us children. She wants me dead. It was so confusing. I was blamed for my mother's unhappiness. And then afterwards, she would make me sit on her lap after an aggressive outburst and forgive her. She would cry. She would say sorry. She would stroke my hair. And she would hold me until I told her I forgive her. She had many breakdowns and anger fits like this. And as a child, I was frightened and I felt often that I wanted to just disappear, not to be seen, not to be heard, not to be harmed. And I'm bringing this up because a lot of people go through this in their relationship. Their partner screams something so hurtful at them, or their partner smashes something, or their partner does whatever they do. And then they beg and they say they're sorry. Then the person forgives them. Then they do the same again. And they're the same again. And it's utterly confusing. Because you're like, okay, I can see that person's really sorry. I can see that they're crying. Yet why are they doing it? So if you want someone to trust you, that you are not going to do the same behaviors again, you have to take responsibility. Doesn't matter what anyone says or does, You are responsible for your reactions. You are responsible for the words that come out of your mouth. You are responsible for everything. And you own that responsibility and you create a plan and you get help from wherever you want until it changes. Clearly, my poor mum was not well. Coping with a 2-year-old, a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old alone. Plus she was pregnant again at that time when I was 4 in that incident. Huge financial stress because my father was in and out of jobs all the time. And rather than get any help, she suffered in silence. She feared that if she went to the doctors, we would all be taken away. She feared that people would talk about her in town. So she suffered with her depression. She suffered with feeling stressed and anxious and depressed every single day. And she didn't have a mum that was there for her because her mum from, I think it was even younger than 12, was in bed ill fighting breast cancer. So again, it's not my mother's fault at all, but I felt that I was a burden, that I caused people pain, that I caused my mum stress and frustration. And that is why I had to work early on when I started my journey, because that is the age in your early years where you learn how to adapt to the world, how to form relationships, how to be in a relationship. And when I do the breakthrough program, I always start with the earliest emotions of the anger, the sadness, the fear, the hurt, the guilt. So how to know if your self-esteem comes from childhood? One option is to do an exploratory session with a therapist, set an intention for what you want to work on, and to do a healing process and to be guided to where it started. Now, you might not identify with low self-esteem, but when did you decide that or think you're not good enough? When did you decide that all men are like this, all women are like this? And feel into that, and then often pictures, memories, sensations come up. Look at also the patterns that you've had since a child. Do you use criticism to motivate yourself to get things done? Often people believe that the best way to get to their goals is to beat themselves up, to use fear to scare them into doing work. And I always say to them, when I'm working with people that have this, I say, whose voice is it? And people will say, oh, it's my aunt's, it's my dad's, it's my mum's, it's my granddad's, it's my sister's, it's my brother's, it's mine. People struggle today because they're so harsh on themselves, constantly judging themselves, that whatever they're doing is not enough. Another destructive pattern to really look out for is self-sabotage. I found myself in my worst times of low self-esteem doing things to mess up, and I wasn't even aware that I was doing it. It was that unconscious. I believed that I messed up, so then I would do things that a messed up person would do. If you feel like you're a failure, you will self-sabotage so that you are that failure. If you believe you are crazy, you'll do things where you can say, see, you're crazy. See, there's something wrong with you. Because whatever you believe in life, you will seek to prove yourself right. Because you believe it. It's how you see yourself. I would believe, no, I'm not good in relationships. Relationship happiness won't ever happen for me. I'd binge on food and alcohol and then say, see, you're out of control. And I'd repeat the cycle of self-bashing. Like, if you want to have a drink and enjoy it. If you want to have your food, enjoy it. The worst thing you can do is drink and then beat yourself up the next day. Eat and then beat yourself up for eating it the next day. Be conscious. Sip it. Bite it slowly. Appreciate it. And you will soon realize if you are conscious and in the present and in tune with your body, you won't actually want that much. You won't actually be that interested in it. And I also would self-sabotage by pulling away from good opportunities for me. I'd really want something and then I would tell myself, oh, I don't think I've got the time, or oh, it's too much pressure, or I don't think I could do it, I'll do it next year, I'll do it another time, because I was scared. And I actually had to have this being pointed out to me. I actually had to have someone say, do you think that you are doing things to beat yourself up? I was like, no. And then I thought about it. I thought, no, I'm not doing these things to beat myself up or to say that I'm bad. I was like, no. But then when I really saw that it's a cycle, and it's a cycle that's been repeated and repeated and repeated, I thought, maybe. Maybe they have a point. Maybe I do actually believe that I am messed up or there's something wrong with me. And then I am doing these things to be that person. And thankfully, that was all a long time ago now. And I speak to myself in the way that I want to be. And that's what I'm going to kind of finish up with now to give you some tips. So the two most powerful words in the English language are I am. Core identity beliefs, I am, are so powerful. They're so, so strong. They are programming codes. When you think and you say, I am this, every strand of your DNA listens and waits for what comes next. It prepares your body. As I mentioned, and as you already know, the mind, the thoughts, the beliefs, the emotions, and our actions are all linked, and they all go into each other, all in a circle or a triangle. And so if you say to yourself, I am lost, I am stuck, I am broken, your body and your mind will say, okay, you're stuck. Okay, you're broken. And you will feel it, and you'll believe it, and you'll become it, because your whole body responds to this. Ancient meditation experts all around the world know this. I am statements are in meditations everywhere. Modern meditation experts use it as well because it's so powerful. I am. For example, if you say, I am sick and tired of this mess, your DNA says, okay, she's sick and tired. Cue the brain fog. Make the body heavy. Ramp up the frustration. Lower the patience. Lower the immune system. She wants to feel messy. I have so many people that they have been hurt by the one they love because the one they love says to them, I'm not sure I'm in love with you anymore, or I'm not attracted to you anymore, or they go and cheat on them. And in our sessions, or when I meet them, or in the breakthrough with me, they'll say, I'm destroyed. I am weak. I am unattractive. I am fat. I am disgusting. I am a failure. These words make the whole situation so much worse. So the first step in helping yourself is to say to yourself positive I am statements. Statements that start with I am are so powerful. Don't believe me? Give it a go. Right now, if you are having a difficult time, please do this exercise. Humor me. Give it a go. It can't do any harm, right? So let's say you started to say to yourself, if you are in a challenging situation at the moment, I'm going to get through this. I am safe. I am strong. I am lovable. I am patient. I am kind. I am enough. I am beautiful. I am attractive. I am engaging. I am interesting. I'm irresistible. I'm worthy. I'm unlimited. I am light. I am love. I am courageous. I am going to have a great life. I am going to fill in the blank. Whenever you do this, every strand of your DNA says, okay, she is this. Increase the peace. Increase the feelings of well-being and understanding. Flood the body with feel-good feelings, hormones. Cue nice words and compliments to self and others. Appreciate self and others. The biggest thing we can do for self-esteem is to take responsibility for our thoughts, because our body is always listening to our thoughts. I know, for example, that if I have a conversation with someone about their insomnia and I explain to them how sometimes I find it hard to sleep, that night, guess what? I can't sleep, because I've just told myself, I've complained about the times when I didn't used to be able to sleep. And hopefully that won't happen tonight, touch wood. I always find myself not sleeping that night because I've just told my mind that I find it hard to sleep. And the body doesn't, the mind doesn't care whether you say I used to or I did. You're giving the instruction, I can't sleep. So give the instruction, I find it so easy to sleep. Sleeping is easy. And what I do when I hit the pillow sometimes, is I'll say to myself, good night, Nicola, you're going to have a really loving, deep, full sleep. You're going to sleep so easy tonight. Sleeping is easy. Sleeping is natural. It happens to everybody. Everybody around the world sleeps. The body is designed to sleep, so just sleep. And I just calm myself, and it really works. Because what our mind, our thoughts are followed by our body, and it's giving those instructions to yourself. So I am statements are a great way to boost your self-esteem. I highly recommend you do them daily. Write out five, your top five I am statements, because it is the deep-rooted limiting beliefs, those negative beliefs that prevent people from forming happy, deeper connections. You want a connected, loving, deep relationship. Clear out that negativity. So start replacing any negative thoughts with some positive new beliefs, some I am statements. So write out five and put it on a post-it note or a card or whatever you want to put it on. And put it on your bathroom mirror. Put it on the dashboard of your car. Put it on your desk. Type them up and put them as your screensaver on your phone. Put it everywhere. And repeat it every day. And let me know how you get on. So let's say I choose my top five is I am lovable. I am enough. I am strong. I am healthy. I am beautiful. Okay, just made up five there. And if you can, say them out loud. And the best thing about face masks is that you can talk to yourself without someone thinking you're crazy. That is what I absolutely love about the pandemic and face masks. That, you know, if there is going to be a little benefit, that would be that I can actually talk to myself and people can't really know. So I've always talked to myself. I get it from I think that's my mum talked to herself, so I think I get it from her. But I think a lot of people talk to themselves. And if you do, then celebrate that. I think it's great to be able to have a conversation with yourself. And yeah, I don't think it makes you crazy. I think it's just, well, I find it helpful, actually. I do talk to myself a lot. Anyway, I'm going to carry on with my points, otherwise I'm waffling here and I'm going to bore you. So some people do this I am exercise when they are brushing their teeth. Some people do it in their exercising. If you can add movement to it, even better. Let's say that you're doing some stretching after a workout or some stretching at the beginning of a workout and you just go, you know, put your arm over your head. I am healthy. I am well. Whatever it is, just try and put it into some exercises. Then it really gets into your body. And I know you may be skeptical thinking, will these I ams work? Or this is a bit cringy, Nicola. Like, I can't even do that. Like a lot of people, I can even look in the mirror and say, I love you about 12 years ago. Like, how ridiculous is that? I couldn't even look at myself and say, I love you in the mirror. I can't tell you why now. Thank goodness I can now. Like, why couldn't I do that? No idea. So do that if you want to. And I've got so much more I can share on low self-esteem, on trauma, on relationships, on attachment styles. However, I realise that not all the listeners are suffering with low self-esteem or want to look at childhood things. So I am going to go back to some more relationship-focused ones now on affair recovery, codependency, what exactly asexual is, and then I might do a few more of these deeper podcasts. I know a lot of you have loved them, a lot of you have started to benefit from them, and I'm also going to talk a lot more about ADHD, because I got diagnosed with ADHD 2 months ago, which was a shock, and now because I obviously have lived with it and coped with it and managed it all this time that it's been really undetected, I'm going to share some of my tools and techniques of living with ADHD. So do stay tuned to that. Do subscribe to the show. If you like the show, I'd be so grateful if you could leave a rating and review. because I want it to be more visible to more people. I think that people should be able to access people talking from their heart, real truth behind things, real honesty, real openness, and to hear stories of people changing their lives, changing how they are in relationships, saving their relationships. It's so important. I wish I had this to listen to when I was growing up and suffering with bulimia for all of those years. People rarely speak openly and honestly these days, and all these picture perfect social media makes people think like, God, why am I unhappy? Why am I feeling low? Why am I feeling anxious? How come everybody else is having a great life? And that's what I really love about the relationship Facebook group that I started. We have over 3,000 members now, and people really share what's going on. And there's so many loving responses from other people that have gone through it, that have give them tools and tips. And I will reply to every post as well, give my insights. It's just so nice to actually hear real struggles and real stories of how people have recovered from various relationship challenges. So do join us. If you want to post a question in there for the group, you can post it anonymously, so you know your identity is protected, and it'd be lovely to connect with you more personally. So from my heart to yours, thank you so much for watching. As I mentioned, if this has triggered you at all, I will put a link for a 15-minute call with me. And if you are really feeling vulnerable right now for any reason, then reach out to somebody. There's lots of free helplines in many countries. And if you have a close friend or family member that you trust, do talk. Talking sometimes doesn't solve the solution. It can definitely, if they're a compassionate person, start to help you realize that you are worthy of love. So from my heart to yours, thank you so much for listening again. And I look forward to joining you in the next podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Relationship and Wellness Podcast with Nicola Beer. Check out the award-winning audio programs. Visit www.nicolabeer.com today.